Welcome to the Morning Glory Project, Stories of Determination. I'm your host, Betsy Graziani Fassbender. Like in nature, we see determined flowers and vines clinging to life and seeking light, so are Morning Glory people. And in this podcast, I'll interview writers, activists, artists, entrepreneurs, survivors and thrivers, and trailblazers of all kinds. These are folks that have been determined to get over, under, around, and through the obstacles that face them, or to seize the opportunities that come before them. I find these people inspiring and amazing. I know you will too. I'm ever so happy to welcome someone whom I'd like to call one of my writer's conference friends to the microphone of the Morning Glory Project today. Known as the Plot Whisperer, Martha Alderson has a lifelong passion to support women's voices through their storytelling. And with the help of what she calls the universal story, she invites writers to imagine themselves as the protagonist of their own story as they embark on a journey mirroring the major turning points in stories and every creative endeavor. Having undertaken the journey herself, the experience helped Martha to better understand her own struggles, her own brokenness in a new light. She shares the possibilities with others in her latest book, Boundless Creativity, a spiritual workbook for overcoming self-doubt, emotional traps, and other creative blocks. Beginning at the intersection of creativity and spiritual well-being, the workbook views obstacles and challenges and lessons as created specifically for each individual person to advance meaningful growth. The spiritual purpose of creating is to challenge you to express yourself with no doubt, no fear, and which Martha has been able to do with her own historical novel, Parallel Lives, A Love Story, which is due out in June 2020. We all ache to be seen and heard for our true selves, and Martha wrote Boundless Creativity as a journal guide toward creative expression and inner confidence and peace. Martha Alderson, welcome to the Morning Glory Project. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you, Betsy. I'm really thrilled to be here.
First of all, I want to let people know before we begin that though we're talking about a book about writing, this is really more about living creatively. It's not exclusively for writers by any means at all. Whether somebody has a vision for a business or a philanthropic endeavor or another genre of art, artistic expression, this is relevant to all creatives, right?
Exactly.
So tell me what prompted you to write this book and help me understand what the universal story is and how it relates to this book that you've written.
Okay. So I have been a plot consultant for writers for many years. And, you know, every story needs a plot, right? If you're a screenwriter or a novelist or a memoirist, you need a plot. And once I figured out what a plot was, this was years ago, and there weren't very many resources available that really dealt with plot or delved into it, because I think there was a lot of fear that it would sort of stifle the creative expression. But the fact that you need it, and women especially need it, because it's not necessarily something that is intuitive for, you know, right-brained people who are highly creative and can tend to be a little bit disorganized, because plot is very linear, structured, logical.
And do you think that a lot of women tend to write more like about the people stuff, the character? They yes. Tend to come at it from that, as opposed to, you know, if you think of, again, I don't want to speak in broad stereotypes about gender here because there's all kinds of overlap, but if you think of typically, quote, male genres of, you know, the spy novel and the espionage and, you know, the adventure novel, they have to have a very clear plot, right? Whereas women's stories tend to be more about relationship and intimate connection and those things. Is that what you're talking
right.
about?
So yes. And so screenwriters traditionally use plot heavily, as do those genres, those male genres you were just speaking of, because they demand dramatic action. Whereas women, as you said, deal more with the character emotional development arc, but they still need to integrate dramatic action in order to keep the page turning and keep the reader interested. And that there was sort of a break there, and I tried to be the bridge to help create a pathway.
so that women's voices could get heard, so that their stories could get published or filmed or
exactly
whatever. So it was helping kind of compensate for something that men brought to the table more easily
exactly
than women did. Stare again, we're speaking in broad brush generalities here. I don't mean to imply that there aren't good women who write good plot stories, but as a general rule. So tell me then, what prompted you to write this book? How does this connect to what you know about the universal story and the hero's journey as Joseph Campbell would have described it?
Okay. So in working with writers for years, I would do these plot consultations over the telephone. And what I would find is we would oftentimes spend time in the, you know, in the consultation, dealing with their emotional reaction to the challenges and obstacles that they were faced with in creating a plot for their stories.
So there's a parallel journey here. There's the hero's journey or the universal story that you're writing about in your book, and that's the plot structure that you were coaching. But you were discovering also that the creative person, in this case the writer, was having her own hero's journey in the writing process. Did I get that right?
Right. That there were just a lot of time spent with encouragement, trying to explain and show what all of this angst represented to them. Because I really believe that when you undertake any creative project from beginning all the way to the end, you have the potential for transformation. And that transformation comes about because in order to get to the end, oftentimes you have to deal with your own internal issues, your emotional blocks, your negativity, the belief system that you have, all your past sort of wounds.
Traumas that you may have suffered.
Right. Which I call the backstory wound that, lots of us have and carry around with us that interfere with our light and interfere with our being able to be open to the muse and channel what's coming through us onto the page or, whatever the creative project is.
And getting the distractions and discouragements and hesitations and doubts out of the way to do that.
Right. And that to me became more fascinating and more exciting to deal with than the actual plot work. And that was because I had done the plot work for years. And now there's lots of books about plot and it's, pretty accessible. But this other side isn't necessarily so much. And so I wrote Boundless Creativity because I wanted to provide a resource for people who had a vision, had a dream, have this passion of something they know that they're called to do or that they really, really want to do, but they keep getting in their own way. Because as soon as we give ourselves a goal and we have a deadline, we meet ourselves. We meet all of our internal issues and all this stuff starts coming up. And a lot of people won't finish or won't even undertake a creative project because they're afraid of the rejection, the negativity, the criticism, both internal and external. And what I wanted to show through the universal story is that this is a universal dilemma that all of us go through. And rather than shy away from it, I want people to walk right into their fears, face all the things, their own demons and the things that are holding them back so that they can rid themselves of all of that and become the light that they came here to be on earth and bring their voice forward, because I do believe that whatever we create has the potential to change the world.
Hmm. So I've talked then about the double layer. So there's the layer of the hero's journey that one might be writing about or creating in others, some art form. Then there's the creator's hero's journey or universal story for him or herself of struggling with doing that and having the obstacles. And then I'm guessing, I don't know if you think of it this way, but I'm thinking you have a third layer because here you wrote a book about overcoming this, but you had to go through your own universal story of struggle to write this book. So is that right?
Well, and I think the reason that I was so sensitive about this aspect of writing and then, you know, working with other creatives is because I really dealt with it myself. When I was young, I was dyslexic and nonverbal, and I was often laughed at and ridiculed mercilessly. And then as I became more verbal, my beliefs in the miraculous, a lot of beliefs that I had were still ridiculed, and I was still sort of laughed at. And it made me shut down and want to hide my light and try to conform to be like other people. And then later, when I started writing, I took criticism to heart, and it, because it really tapped back into that backstory wound of mine. And I realized to myself, oh my gosh, I'm not smart enough to write a book. I'm not clever enough. I can't figure this out. You know, I'm not meant to do this. And then along the way, I got this hit, which was, so what? So rather than, because I used to say, oh, it doesn't bother me, or I don't mind, or, you know, these sorts of things that you are one-offs that you tell yourself so that it doesn't hurt so much. But once I got the phrase, so what, it really pushed me past those who stood in my way. Because if they tried to say something negative, I would just think to myself, so what? They can think whatever they want to think. That's not going to stop me. And that really is where, when I started finding value and strength in my own vulnerability, and I became best friends with my spirit and with nature, and then I had everything I needed, and I never looked back.
So your own overcoming was about overcoming that, as you call it, did you say backstory wound?
Yeah.
So your own backstory, being a kid with a disability or a learning challenge and being teased about that and probably internalizing, I'm stupid, I'm not smart enough, I'm not good enough, I'm not whatever, that overcoming that, this magical phrase, so what? So tell me a little bit more about the so what. So the so what is, what goes on internally when you say that to yourself?
It's just empowering. It allows me to stay in my power and allows the other person or the critique or the review or whatever stand in their own power. It's fine. I let others say or do whatever they need to say or do because I know they're on their own universal story, but it doesn't have to affect me. It has nothing to do with me. It's almost as if they're looking in the mirror and saying it to themselves because it's reflective of issues that they hold that they are either needing to deal with or have dealt with or refuse to deal with. And so that so what is just, it really, instead of saying, oh, I don't care, which I really care desperately, when I could say so what, it just took away the sting of anything. It just was like a barrier.
So what that kind of says, so what's the big deal about that? Or I'm going to go
exactly.
on.
Exactly. What's the big deal?
I once had a teacher, this is, you know, I think high school. Yes, it was high school. Ivan Hershey. I'll never forget him. And he said, because I was very tenderhearted and sensitive to criticism and all of those things, very, very, very shy child and young person. And he said, other people's opinions of you are none of your business.
Exactly.
So that sounds a little bit like you're so what?
Exactly.
Not like it doesn't hurt, but you know, I think what you're saying, and I think what Ivan Hershey was saying to me back then is, that's their story.
And it doesn't hurt anymore because it isn't my story. So I don't, you know, I can have boundaries around me and have a shield around me where I can deflect things like that because it isn't my story. It's not about me. And so why take that in to my tender heart and allow it to slow me down or affect me or reinforce those negative patterns that I once carried because I want to stand up. I want to shine my light. I want to be able to be a light for others. And I'm not going to get there if I let negativity stand in my way.
So that's about like other people's criticism. There are real obstacles. If you're an artist or a writer or you're creating a nonprofit organization, whatever endeavor you might be, there are some real world obstacles that that can sometimes stop you or slow you down or be harder than you imagine. So the real world obstacles come up in people's creative endeavors, but you're talking, it sounds like two different kinds of ways of facing off with that. It sounds like this internal battle.
Exactly. Because the real world problems, those can be overcome in some way or another. It's your reaction to those real world problems that get in your way. It's your emotional reaction. And that's why in the book, there's a lot. I focus a lot on emotions. I focus a lot on our self-talk, what we're saying to ourselves over and over again. You know, all the patterns that we have that interfere with us fearlessly moving forward to be, you know, fearless people, to live in a fearless way. And so that's why I wrote this workbook. And it's just been a real joy to share the universal story, because yes, it is like Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, but I take it further. I feel like it is a universal pathway, an energetic pathway toward transformation, and that we're all on it together and we're all connected on it. And once you understand what it is and where you are on the universal story, it allows you to have a different sensibility about everything that's happening to you in your life.
You know, Martha, as you're talking, I'm having this memory come up about a woman whom I met actually at a writer's conference, and I didn't know her, and she was so smart and interesting to talk to. And I, you know, she was attending some of the same classes I was, and so we got to talking, and I think we shared lunch together. And she started telling me about the fact that she had four books written. And I said, oh my gosh, that's great. Well, what are they? And she says, oh no, they're not published. She says, but I have four written. And I said, oh, wait, have you had trouble getting them published or whatever? And she said, no, she says, I don't want to publish them yet. And I, why? You know, why? She said, are they unfinished? She said, no, I've had them professionally edited. I'm very confident. They're beautiful books. I'm really happy. She says, but I want to lose 50 pounds before I publish it, because I can't bear the idea of going on a book tour looking the way I do.
Well, and I think I've heard lots of stories like that, and we get so far ahead of ourselves. It's like, you know, you haven't even published yet, so there isn't a book tour yet. That's not a reality. Those are self-sabotaging behaviors, and we have them, and they are the things that allow us to rationalize staying in our weak darkness rather than moving into the light.
So she's borrowing ahead of time a worry, and it's an irrelevant worry on top of it. I mean, you know, who expects their authors to be skinny willows anyway? Even if it's true, it's absurd.
Yeah, but that again, that's a self-talk. That's an internal belief of, I'm fat, I'm overweight, I don't deserve to do this until I'm better. And there are all of these things that we deal with. And it's not just writers, it's everybody deals with it, whether they're creative or not. I just happen to write this story for people who are interested in becoming creative or are creative and sort of stopped by some of these, you know, self-sabotaging behaviors that get in their way.
So Martha, what is your universal story? Your own, in addition to being dyslexic as a kid and kind of having that, what else did you need to overcome so that you, I guess what I'm trying to get at is what your background experience is that gave you this insight?
Well, I was also repeatedly molested as a child, and you know, being developmentally delayed, I didn't speak about what happened. I didn't have the words for it, but I also don't know that I would have spoken about it because it was filled with shame and, you know, all of those things, and really set me up for feeling different, feeling dirty, feeling, you know, wounded and broken. And so I, you know, did a lot of really I harmed myself in every way that you could possibly think of, because I felt like, you know, self-punishment, which I think is something that is tragic, and yet it was what I did. And but it made me very sensitive. I was a very shy kid. I was, you know, I still am kind of, you know, I'm very introverted. I'm a homebody. I love to just sort of hang out in nature. And so my sensitivity, I think, opened me up to other people's sensitivity. And I think when you're sensitive, you're almost a magnet for other people to open up. And I rarely spoke. And so it allowed other people to speak a lot, you know, where they would sort of pour all their problems and fears and things to me. And so anyway, all of it sort of led to this workbook. And this, I feel, is my life's work almost.
Your opus, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. And I'm mostly excited about the universal story because it's so, you know, I can see where people are on their own journey. And it's not like we're just on one path and one journey. Every time we take on something new, we start over again and we go through all of these ups and downs and hit these major turning points. But each time we meet our triumph at the end, it empowers us. It allows us to feel the confidence to then take on something even scarier or something bigger or something more fierce. And I think for women, we need to make our voices heard. We need to bring balance back to the earth because with this patriarchal run world, you know, it's off kilter. There just aren't enough women that are in a position to balance the things that are happening. And that's never going to happen until women's voices rise up. And that's never going to happen until we become brave, fierce, willing to step out into the unknown fearlessly.
You know, it makes me think of, I guess this is sort of a tragic term, but how many brilliant, amazing, creative people, and indeed probably in larger portions women than men, because men tend to be more assertive about such things. But how many people don't reach that accomplishment level because they stop themselves before it ever happens? You know, they're so discouraged along the way that they quit climbing the mountain. They have the unfinished manuscript in the bottom of the desk drawer, or they think about starting something but talk themselves out of it, or instead hook up with romantically with somebody that isn't so good for them and who discourages them, or they kind of recruit even more obstacles into their lives.
Well, and I think now more and more women are being empowered. But in my generation, you know, we weren't really encouraged to, you know, go to school, go to college. But it was about, you know, and getting a career because of the women's movement. But it wasn't really to step too far out of the box because that was sort of men's territory, you know, the patriarchal sense. And, you know, we were often discouraged from doing certain things because it's not what women do. It's, you know, and there is the glass ceiling and sort of all of those things. And yes, a lot of that has changed radically, but I just don't think it's changed enough. And so this workbook is really my attempt to help all people, you know, to be able to come forward and speak their truth and, yeah, live a full life. Because when you live a creative life and you start meeting your triumph at the end of each project, I think the universe sees you as a willing manifester. And so if there is a project that needs to be done, you'll be hit with more and more inspiration.
And more opportunity.
Right, because you've proven yourself that you can go the distance and that you're not going to give up part way. And it just really, I mean, it's the most exciting thing, I think, to live a creative life because it just lights you up and makes you understand why we're all here and, you know, the beauty around us. And even with the way things are now with the virus and all of the lockdowns and things like that, there's still so much beauty and joy to be able to embrace.
So, Martha, the very first line of your book is, creativity connects us to our spirit. And that seems to be what you're talking about. Can you talk to me about what spirituality means to you? What is that?
Sure. So I see our spirit as the non-physical inner part of ourselves that is connected to everything else. And it is, it's where our energy and our enthusiasm emanate from. It's this inner, you know, I remember when my father was dying and I was trying to comfort him and saying, you know, energy can't be created or destroyed. So the energy, your essence, your spirit is never going to die. You're always going to still be here. And it brought him so much comfort. It was really amazing to watch. And I think that's true. It is this spirit that goes on. And our human form is the physical, you know, the mundane, the banality of life. It's the everyday striving, ambition, you know, trying to achieve and all of those sorts of things, which is part of living. You've got to make a living and, you know, have a roof over your head and all of that. But we lose sight of this real miraculous part of ourselves, which is our spirit. And the more we can connect with that and become friends with it almost, the more we're supported. Because what happens is the longer you're here on earth and the more heartache that you suffer, you know, there are layers and layers that sort of develop over your spirit that can tap down, you know, where you can become lethargic or depressed or, you know, lose your belief in things. And in order to get the spirit to wake up again, you have to be able to free yourself of some of this baggage that we carry around. And you can see it on people's faces by the lines in their faces, by the shoulders, how they're rolled inward, the shuffle of their feet. You can see people who are so burdened by life and the heartache that they're suffered and the effect that it's had on their spirit.
So this is not a one and done kind of an exercise of connecting to one's creative spirit. When you're finding that you're struggling with doing that, what do you do to get to the other side, to get over an obstacle? And I'm not talking about a worldly obstacle, like somebody saying, oh no, we're not publishing this until next year or whatever, you know, those kinds of practical nuts and bolts things. But when you reach one of these kind of crises of your own spirit where you're discouraged or you're having a real hard time, what do you do to get over that bump?
Well, to tell you the truth, it doesn't really happen anymore.
So what did you do?
I would just remind myself. I would find where I was on the universal story. You know, when you're beginning a project, you're full of life and excitement and you can conquer the world. And then you cross over into the middle and that's the testing ground. That's where you have to learn the skills and abilities and the beliefs that you need in order to prevail, you know, to the very end. And so you're met with all kinds of obstacles, physical and non-physical, that you have to overcome. And then, you know, as things intensify and become more and more difficult, you hit a dark night where, and that's about 3/4 of the way through, where you start to doubt and you're crushed and you give up and you decide, you know, I'm not worthy. Lots of times this is a very, very dangerous time, depending on the severity of it and the person's backstory wound, because it can really lead to, you know, just wanting to stop everything, the pain in any way that they can. And then once you overcome that, you fall into the abyss, you sort of have to lick your wounds, figure out what happened, you know, make your choices of how you want to live, either as a victim or a victor. And then you enter the end. And in the end, you still have, you know, a lot of challenges and obstacles in your way, but you've woken up, you've become conscious of how you interfere with your own life and your own light. And knowing that, you then make the ascent to your triumph.
I really like the idea that you eventually get to the spot that you're not struggling with this anymore.
Oh, it's just incredible.
You've done it so many times that you kind of get there and say, oh, ho hum, you're so boring, go away, you little silly trouble.
Yeah, you know? Like, oh, okay, I get it. I understand what's happening here. This is something I need to learn from, I need to overcome. And what I really do, and there's a lot of this in the workbook, is I have affirmations. Rather than fall into that old story that we tell ourselves, that we've been telling ourselves for years and years, thousands and millions of times about our worth or lack of, I give myself positive affirmations about, you know, I'm a happy person, I'm secure, I feel safe, you know, whatever I need in order to.
I've done this before, I can do it again.
Exactly.
That's the one that I find that I gravitate to. It's like, oh, come on. Why does this doubt come up again? You've faced this exact same imposter of a doubt 100 times. You talked it down 100 times and you can do this again. This is just an imposter.
Well, and so, yeah, and I do exactly that. I have first acknowledge what's standing in the way and give honor to it. Okay, I get it. This is that voice and I embrace you and I hear you, but I'm not going to let this control me. You know, I'm going to rise above it, but I do give thanks for it because it allows me to understand how far I've come.
You give thanks for the doubt that comes up?
Yeah. Because that's a big part. That's a big part of who we are. That's a big part we've carried around with us for years. And so how can we dismiss it? That's like dismissing ourselves. It's we earned that fear or we've earned that negativity by reacting, you know, in inappropriate ways or in small, scared ways or whatever. But it's like loving that child within you, that hurt a child, and being able to embrace that and say, I get it. And thank you for being there. And now let's together go for the light and, you know, do what we know what we can do and get there.
It makes me think for some reason that just popped into my head, but I'm thinking of the Paul Simon lyric, you know, hello, darkness, my old friend.
Yes.
That's like, oh, hello, I know you. we've hung out together.
Right. So. And now, but in saying that, you're lighting the darkness. You know, it's not to wallow in the darkness,
right?
Which can be comforting, you know, if you're not willing to really step into your full light. You can just, I mean, sometimes some of that negativity is just like, you know, soothing. It's like eating a cake. It makes you feel good, but only for a little bit. And then all of a sudden, it's like you're worse off than you were. So why not just face it, deal with it, and move on and say, so what? So what if I'm feeling this way? It doesn't define me. You know, I get it. And I'm bigger than this now.
I'm going to embrace the word, so what?
I love it. I got it from a friend's brother is autistic and he wrote a book and one of the short stories was he was being bullied in school when he was young. And he just went up to the bullies and said to them, okay, so what? So what if I'm different? What are you going to do about it? And they were so taken aback, they just left him alone from then on. And I don't know, that just really, really spoke to me.
It's kind of calling the bluff.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, Martha, I'm loving getting into this book. And folks can find out more by going to Martha Alderson, and that's Alderson, MarthaAlderson.com. The book is Boundless Creativity, a spiritual workbook for overcoming self-doubt, emotional traps, and other creative blocks. I'm so touched and happy that you would have this conversation with me today, and I look forward to a time when our paths can cross again.
Thank you, Betsy. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity.
I came out of my conversation with Martha Alderson today buzzing with lots of excitement. I love the idea of talking to creative people. And it doesn't matter if you're a writer or a poet or a musician or an entrepreneur or a visual artist, whatever kind of creative endeavor you might be imagining pursuing. Her book is to help folks get through the self-doubt, to get them through the other side. And Martha knows a bit about this. We touched on it only a little bit, but she's a survivor. She's a survivor of sexual abuse. She's a survivor of having been a kid with a learning disability, dyslexia in her case, that made her feel stupid, that she wasn't capable, and that drew bullying and ridicule from others. And, you know, when that happens, when you've been harmed or when you've been bullied or when you've had critical people around you, it's so easy to internalize that and make it part of your own inner dialogue. So those bullies from without become bullies from within. And her workbook is to help folks get out of that, to help them find their spiritual center, to help them get through. And I love what she said about facing off with that internal bully, which is by using two simple words. So what? So what if you think I can't do this? So what if you think I'm stupid? So what if you think I can? I can do this. I can do this. I rather love that. It reminds me of an adage that I heard a long time ago, and I wish I could give credit to whomever created it. But they talk about the six stages of creativity. There's a little blue language in here, but I think you can take it. And the six stages are these. We always start off with, this is awesome, right? We think of a new idea or project and think, wow, that'd be really cool. This is so awesome. I could do that. And then we get into it and it proves to be a little harder than we thought. And stage two is, ooh, this is tricky. And if we persist and we keep going, maybe we get into the even harder obstacles. Maybe those internal and the external obstacles come up. And it transitions from stage two to stage three, which is not just this is tricky, but this is shit. I can't do this. Then it can go into stage four, which is, in a hero's journey, would be called the dark night of the soul. Stage four is not just this is shit, but I am shit. In other words, I'm worthless. I can't do this. I'm not up to it. Somebody else could do this, but not me. If we persist through that, if we push through that dark night of the soul, stage five is, wow, this might be okay. It's tricky. It's going to take some work, but I might just be able to do it. And stage six, this is awesome. That's a pretty cool process to go through, and I think that all creatives go through it in some way or another. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode of The Morning Glory Project, and also let me just bring you one other little extra bloom, and that is that I've mentioned maybe one or two times before, there's another podcast called Stories That Inspire, hosted by Sean Farjadi. It's a lovely little snippet of just sweetness, and gosh, couldn't we all use that right now? Sweetness and inspiration and good people talking about doing good things. I hope that you are safe, that your loved ones are connected, and that you are snug and supplied in these wearying times. And I hope that wherever you are, you find a way to bloom.